From NPR News, this is special coverage of the South Carolina Republican primary. I'm Guy Raz.
And I'm Audie Cornish. The voters have spoken in South Carolina today.
Newt Gingrich gets a win for the first time in the 2012 primary contest. Mitt Romney is the number two man tonight, and Rick Santorum appears to be in third but fights on to Florida and beyond.
I'm going to go out and talk about how we're going to have a Republican Party, a conservative movement.
Ron Paul is running in fourth but vows to fight on as he continues to buy ads in Nevada and Minnesota.
Coming up, analysis and newsmaker interviews on tonight's big upset victory by former Speaker Newt Gingrich. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. And here in the studio with us is NPR's senior Washington editor, Ron Elving. Ron, let me ask you about Mitt Romney and whether, if Mitt Romney does eventually manage to pull this out somehow and become the nominee, I shouldn't say somehow, but he's got the money and he's got the momentum in some ways, how much damage has this done? Has this done for Romney if in fact he's going to be the guy facing President Obama?
There have been several revelations this week about Mitt Romney. One of them is that he does not deal very well toe-to-toe with a tough debater on stage. Now, we were not terribly surprised to see this. He hasn't been an outstanding debater throughout, but he's had more equilibrium, and no one has really found that place where his armor is at the seam and he can really be vulnerable until this week. And Newt Gingrich found it repeatedly. So a good deal of what we saw in that debate dynamic was Mitt Romney's flaw. Then, of course, the way he handled the tax return issue, the 15% tax rate issue, the non-release issue. That was halting, even stumbling in the debates, and it got worse when he wasn't on stage. So he still has that vulnerability. Plus, we're wondering how the voters may have been introduced to him in this winter of his highest visibility as an extraordinarily rich person who doesn't seem to know very much about those who aren't.
I mean, he may be bruised now and battered a bit, but come the general election time, voters tend to forget those things, right?
Sometimes. Other times when a moment of maximum visibility, such as we've seen this week, has really changed the way some voters perceive you, that can spread. A lot depends on how much Newt Gingrich succeeds on the attack in Florida and in subsequent states, and then how well the Democrats can turn on those attacks in the summer and fall.
Ron, stand by for us for a moment. We'll be back to you in a sec.
And we've got at Mitt Romney's headquarters, NPR's Ari Shapiro. Hey, Ari.
Hey, Audie, how are you?
What's the mood there? Sounds subdued.
Kind of empty. You know, people were cheering when they were here. They were saying, on to Florida, 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 Florida. The nice thing for the Romney campaign about Florida is that it is really big and really expensive. It's not a state like Iowa or New Hampshire where you can shake hands with every voter. And so having the kind of money that the Romney campaign has, where you can really saturate airwaves in Orlando and Miami and the Panhandle all at the same time with Spanish language ads and English language ads, that's something the Romney campaign can do really well.
And of course they've already started, right, Ari?
Oh yeah, they've got like more than $7 million in ads in the state already.
Ari, did you get a sense from the speech whether the wind is really out of the sails for Romney? I mean, he's got a speech coming up, I believe, this week where he's going to try and hit the reset button.
Yeah, you know, what was so interesting to me about his speech tonight, he typically attacks Obama unrelentingly without mentioning his rivals. He still didn't mention his rivals, but without using Newt Gingrich's name, he described Newt Gingrich as almost a doppelganger for President Obama. He said, the problem with this president is that he's never run a state, never run a business. We can't challenge him with a Republican who's never run a state, never run a business. This president, Romney said, criticizes free enterprise. We can't challenge him with a Republican who criticizes free enterprise, really conflating Gingrich and Obama in the speech tonight.
And it sounds like he's going to push that argument about the free enterprise bashing in the next coming days.
Yeah, it's funny because I think, you know, 6 months ago when we were gaming out what Romney's weaknesses might be, people talked about health care, people talked about his social issues, people talked about his changing positions on various issues. It hasn't been any of those to the extent that it has been this issue of his work at Bain Capital, investing in companies, and this question of, well, how do you define free enterprise and is it, you know, creative destruction or is it really killing jobs to make money?
That's NPR's Ari Shapiro at Mitt Romney's headquarters in Columbia, South Carolina.
Let's turn now to Andrew Kohut from the Pew Research Center. Andy, interestingly, Newt Gingrich won decisively with voters who believed that the most important quality was a candidate's ability to defeat President Obama. 51% to 37% of voters said Gingrich was the man to do that.
Yes, and he also won among people who said they were looking for the candidate with the most experience. One of the interesting things, though, given Gingrich's experience and what we've seen in South Carolina this week, is the big class difference in the vote. Among people who are college graduates, it was a pretty even race, 37% for Gingrich, 31% for Romney. Among people who did not have a college degree, 42 to 24 margin for Gingrich over Romney, which may speak to Romney's problems coming out of Bain, coming out of the 15%. It may speak to his ultimate problems in a general election with the people that we call disaffected Republicans. The other thing that comes out of this exit poll is how little we've learned about the sentiments of independent voters who didn't play a big deal here. They're only about 25% of the vote. But that 25% of the vote, there was no decisive winner. Gingrich got 31, Paul got 24, and Romney got 25. Very, very close. And it's likely that we're not going to know how independent voters are going to go in other states.
Andy Kohetz, stand by. You're listening to special coverage of the South Carolina Republican primary from NPR News. From NPR News, it's special coverage of the South Carolina Republican primary. I'm Guy Raz.
And I'm Audie Cornish. It is Newt's night. Results are still coming in, but with more than half of precincts reporting, the former House Speaker has left his competition in the dust.
The second-place finisher, Mitt Romney, acknowledged that things did not go his way tonight.
I don't shrink from competition. I embrace it. I believe competition makes us all better. And I know it's making our campaign stronger. And in the coming weeks, the ideals of free enterprise and economic freedom will need a very strong defense, and I intend to make it.
Third place appears to have gone to Rick Santorum. The former Pennsylvania senator spoke about values tonight.
We stand up and want to promote the values that made this country great, the values of faith, family, and freedom.
Here to talk with us about what's going on in the race is NPR's senior political correspondent, Mara Liasson. Mara, I don't know if it's too soon to look to Florida right now, but it seems to me a whole different electorate there.
It's not too soon because the candidates are looking to Florida. They're already in Florida, and there's going to be a debate in Tampa on Monday night. I think that it's not too soon to look to Florida. Mitt Romney certainly thinks that's going to be his firewall. He has spent a lot of money on television ads there already, $3 million. Newt Gingrich has spent zero, from what I understand. And the question is, will there be a similar super PAC dump of attack ads on Newt Gingrich in the way that Romney's super PAC did to Gingrich in Iowa? I think we can expect that. We also heard from Romney tonight the line of attack he's going to use against Gingrich. He says an attack on Bain Capital is an attack on economic freedom and free enterprise. Now, that didn't work in South Carolina. Romney had a lot of surrogates saying that exact same thing, and Newt Gingrich was not seen as a socialist. Newt Gingrich himself says, I'm only attacking Romney's business practices, not venture capital itself or private equity himself. So that clearly is going to be the way that Romney will go after Gingrich. I'm sure he'll bring up all of the other flaws that Gingrich has, and you can only call Gingrich a target-rich environment on that count.
And of course, I should mention, we are awaiting Newt Gingrich. His supporters are waiting for him in Columbia, South Carolina to take the stage. Mara, more about Florida. You know, I look to that state and I see a huge senior vote, huge Latino vote, huge Jewish vote.
Not all of them are going to vote in the Republican
primary. No, of course.
Florida as a general election battleground state, which it is, but the Republican primary electorate there, while less conservative overall than South Carolina, is pretty conservative.
No, of course, but then there's issues like Medicare, Social Security, immigration. Those are general election issues that are really going to rear their head in Florida in a way that I just haven't seen them, you know, in South Carolina or New Hampshire.
Yes, and we'll see. I don't think that Gingrich and Romney are too far apart on Medicare. They do have different plans, and I'm sure many of those issues will come up in the debate on Monday night. Immigration is a really interesting one because although the immigration vote, if you want to call it that, in the Republican primary in Florida is a little bit different because most of the voters in the primary will be Cuban, but still, Newt Gingrich has been the moderate on immigration. He has been the one who has worked for years to appeal to Hispanic voters. He has a Hispanic newsletter called The Americano. He has a whole plan and policies to appeal to Hispanic voters. And of course, Romney has decided to move to the far right or hard right on this issue, first to attack Rick Perry, and I'm sure he'll use it against Gingrich, too.
Andy Cohat, what's your sense of things looking forward to Florida based on what you see coming out of South Carolina? What's the target-rich environment for these candidates?
Well, it's pretty interesting. Florida is going to be an older electorate than what we've seen here. And tonight in South Carolina, we saw Romney once again do better among older voters, but we also saw Gingrich do much better among older voters than younger voters. And among the 65 and olders, Gingrich won 47-36, even though that 36 was pretty strong for Romney relative to how well he did among younger voters. So there's this age issue that doesn't seem the advantage for Romney that we might have thought a week or two ago when we saw how well he did among older voters in both Iowa and New Hampshire.
And given what you said, thinking about something like Medicaid, you know, you had Newt Gingrich last year calling House Budget Chairman Paul Ryan's plan Republican social engineering. He got a lot of slack for that. I mean, people went after him for that. And it seems like some of these issues will be a little more complex going forward.
Yeah, I think that's one of the lessons here. Each of these electorates are so different in terms of composition, so different in terms of emphasis. It's been hard to project one victory onto the next, and perhaps it's hard to project this victory onto the next. Perhaps, by the way.
Let me bring Ron Elving into the conversation. Ron, what do you make of this? I guess you could call it a kind of an elitism gap, right? I mean, you look at the kinds of people who chose Gingrich over Romney, it would suggest that Romney came across as an elitist to some GOP primary voters in South Carolina.
That's right. He made several remarks during the course of the week that suggested that the nature of his wealth is so great that he really just doesn't even think about taxes the way normal people do, doesn't think about income levels the way they do. That's not good politics in any party, in any time, in any state. But let's also remember that Newt Gingrich is making a connection here despite the fact that he has a doctoral degree. He is a PhD, former college professor, a fact he reminds us of rather often.
He also lives in France, we should say.
And he has not exactly been living down in Georgia or in the Deep South in recent decades. Yet he was able, despite all of those credentials and all those characteristics, to zero in on what was moving the people in South Carolina this past week. And when he talked about the food stamps president, and when he went after the president with, let's say, the gloves off on a number of issues, that was what was resonating and getting those people to stand up and give him a standing ovation in South Carolina.
Ron, stand by. We've got Tamara Keith on the line. She's with us from Gingrich headquarters in Columbia, South Carolina. Tamara, everyone's waiting for Speaker Gingrich, but I guess the excitement is palpable there.
Yeah, everyone here was really pumped about 2 minutes ago when they said Newt Gingrich was coming out, and everyone screamed, and his entrance song came on the loudspeaker, and then he did not enter.
Uh-huh.
So I think they're icing the crowd.
Yeah.
Or something.
Maybe that's why Journey's playing.
Yeah, playing Journey out there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
we've heard this song a couple of times tonight. You know, folks are just packed in here like sardines. They are sweating. They want to see their candidate. And I think they will be excited when he arrives.
I mean, you could argue that this is Newt Gingrich's biggest night since 1994.
This is his moment. This is it. I'm sure he would like to be on that stage.
All right, Tamara, stand by for us. We'll get back to you in just a moment. Mara, to that point, this is really his biggest night since 1994, isn't it?
It certainly is. Look, I don't know who is writing the biography of Newt Gingrich right now, but I bet there are so many people calling their agents, me, because what a book, what a story. I can't think of a more exciting political story. And you know what? He is the happy warrior in this campaign. Who would have thunk it? He's the happy warrior. He is making it up as he goes along. He's his own consultant. He had the most interesting answer to the question in the debate, what would you have done differently? He said, I wouldn't have wasted those 3 months trying to be a regular candidate.
Yeah.
Now that I'm doing it my way, I'm so much happier. And boy, is he doing better, too. I mean, the guy, and also the thing that's amazing is right after the debate in Charleston, he was interviewed and he said, I thought this was a great debate. I thought John King did a great job.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, and the thing that was so great about it was he was absolutely right and honest, because John King did first of all, two things. One is, of course, John King was the perfect foil for him, and he set up the softball and knew, everybody knew what Newt would do. But the other thing that was amazing when he said that, he doesn't harbor any real animosity to the press. He loves reporters. He is great to deal with as a reporter. Mitt Romney is in a hermetically sealed bubble where you can't even get close to him, you know, in any kind of, informal way, whereas Gingrich talks to people all the time. He's happy doing this. He's not focused and poll tested, focus group tested. Everything he said isn't polled. As a matter of fact, many things probably should be, but they're not.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, he often talks about the press and his disdain for the press. But many of us here who have interviewed him many times know that he loves engaging with reporters. He loves exchanging ideas. And as we've seen in recent days, articles, notably in Politico, an article about how he hangs out at the bar with the reporters at the end of the day every night.
He's very open. And the other thing is, the guy is a pro. He was the Speaker of the House of Representatives. And more than that, he brought Republicans out of the wilderness. He was a successful political insurgent, a successful revolutionary. There are not a lot of them. He has a huge standing in the Republican Party's historical pantheon. And that is what I think was happening in South Carolina. When people say, don't people remember all the things that are wrong with him? Yes, but they also remember that he led Republicans out of the wilderness. He's a huge figure. And it's just the most interesting thing you can imagine. And he knows how to make an attack. It doesn't seem to have gotten rattled yet. It's really a contrast with Romney. It's an incredible contrast.
And Mara, we want to bring in Matthew Continetti, contributing editor to the Weekly Standard. Matthew, are you as sort of excited about this rewriting of Newt's history as everyone is in here?
Well, with Newt, my attitude has been what goes up must come down. And so we've seen him rise up and fall, and then rise up and fall, and now we're seeing him rise up again. So it's only a matter of time before he falls again. And, of course, there's plenty of time before the convention. So we could have many more cycles of the destruction and rebirth in the Gingrich career. Who knows? With this type of year, so much unprecedented things are happening. Maybe at the end of that cycle, he'll end up the nominee. I don't know.
What are some of the aspects of his leadership style that you think are red flags going into a place like Florida?
Well, we have to separate Republicans from the general election. And Republicans find Newt Gingrich immensely appealing for all the reasons that Mara just outlined, whether it's his historical role or whether the grandeur or grandiosity of his vision and outlook or the way he sticks it to liberals and other opponents of the Republicans. If you were looking toward a general election, however, you'd have to be concerned about Newt's high negative ratings. You'd have to be concerned about the way that he polarizes people, including independents. And you'd have to be concerned about his leadership style, in which often he runs ahead of himself and ends up self-destructing.
And Matthew, we have a short time left, but is there a big takeaway from tonight that that really surprised you?
No coronation for Romney. Mm. We thought it was going to happen, but it didn't. And it's going to be a long road ahead, I think.
You're listening to special coverage of the South Carolina Republican primary from NPR News. From NPR News, this is special coverage of the South Carolina Republican primary. I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Guy Raz. A reminder of the results tonight. Newt Gingrich has smashed the competition, and he'll take 23 of the 25 South Carolina delegates. The former House Speaker was an underdog. Now he's the victor.
Earlier tonight, Mitt Romney acknowledged the loss, but stuck with his message.
When my opponents attack success and free enterprise, they're not only attacking me, they're attacking every person who dreams of a better future. He's attacking you. I will support you. I will help you have a better future. I'll make sure that America is a place of opportunity for all.
And at this hour, we are awaiting remarks from Newt Gingrich. NPR's Tamara Keith is at Gingrich headquarters in Columbia, South Carolina. Tamara, they've been teasing the crowd there with lots of music some suggestions that the speaker was coming out, but so far, not a sign of him.
so far, no speaker. The folks on the stage who are supposed to be behind him, those that are still up on the stage, are sort of looking towards the door with the sort of perplexed looks on their faces when they're not wiping away sweat. But the Gingrich soundtrack is pumping through the stereo right now. This is his soundtrack, and they're getting ready for him, but he's just not here yet.
And of course, Tamara, you can imagine that Newt Gingrich is milking this for all it's worth. You know, you got to hand it to him. I mean, he won tonight, and people are waiting to hear him speak, so he might as well drag it out a little bit.
Well, and when he does speak, he will no doubt give a lengthy address, as he normally does, and just soak it in, because Newt Gingrich is a candidate who loves to give a speech, and this is the kind of receptive crowd that he is most certainly going to enjoy. I mean, the thing is, Newt Gingrich doesn't do things the way a candidate is supposed to do things. So maybe we shouldn't be surprised that he was introduced and didn't come on stage. This is Newt Gingrich. He does what he wants to do. He doesn't hire the consultants. And actually, more people are coming up on stage now, so maybe that's a sign?
Well, Tamara, we will be watching. Stand by for a moment. Let's bring some of our colleagues here in the studio in for a moment. Mara Liasson, first to you. Newt Gingrich took 23 of the 25 delegates in South Carolina tonight. It's sort of an odd system. The winner takes 11, and then the rest are sort of divided by congressional districts. Suggests that he did very, very well in this
Yes, day. He did well, and I was just frantically looking for what the total delegate count is so far, because I think we're into a delegate race now. Hmm. Before, it was just going to be bing, 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 back-to-back historic victories, Romney sews it up, off he goes. But if we are in for a long haul, that means it's the kind of delegate war that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama had in 2008. So we're going to see little charts now about how many delegates, and of course Romney's campaign has said they were prepared for that kind of hard slog all along. They've got the infrastructure in all 50 states, and as we go forward, retail campaigning will make less of an importance. I'll tell you something else that we might see. We might see the end of debates. Hmm. You know, why would Mitt Romney continue debating Newt Gingrich, since debates are Gingrich's oxygen? They are probably the most important reason. He has to do it in Florida. But after that, I wonder if he's going to give Gingrich an opportunity.
Matthew Continetti, contributing editor for the Weekly Standard. What's your take on that?
Well, I think Romney's in a bind. I mean, because the second he says no more debates, he comes across as weak and wavering. And I thought we saw that this week. And just in the last 48 hours, one of the reasons I think those late deciders flocked to Gingrich was because they saw not only Gingrich's strong debate performance, but Mitt Romney's inability to articulate why he's been delaying the release of his tax returns. Now, I think it's a defensible decision, but he hasn't defended it.
Yeah,
he goes back and forth, and then he's not sure about what his tax rate is, and he has this huge IRA. It's those types of issues, not the Bain attacks. I've always been skeptical that the Bain attacks would work in a Republican primary, but it was this other issue that emerged late in the game when all this other news events were happening, whether it was Santorum being certified the winner of Iowa, whether it was Perry dropping out endorsing Newt Gingrich, Sarah Palin's kind of half endorsement of saying she would vote for Newt Gingrich if she were in South Carolina.
All these things snowballed,
and when combined with Romney's kind of floundering, I think really hurt him. If he were then to say, even after this Florida debate or after the Florida primary, well, that's it. No more debates. I think the Republican voters would have a sharp reaction.
Mara?
You know, there's something really interesting that we've seen. Not only have we seen the incredible contrast between these two men, but the nimbleness of Newt Gingrich and the way he's been able to understand where the Republican Party was and what issues he should jump on. Mitt Romney has a carefully planned, super planned campaign. He hasn't been able to move it very quickly. It's kind of like an ocean liner. I mean, the fact, I have to assume that they had a plan for the tax returns, but it didn't start till he was the nominee. This was just too soon, and he cannot kind of think on a dime. He can't turn on a dime, and he can't adjust his strategy. He usually reverts to the talking points, which they've worked out very well. I'm the best person who can take on Obama. I've had experience in the real economy. And even now, he's hammering away. Here's Gingrich coming up to the podium.
Yeah, he is coming up to the podium now. We just saw Callista, and here is Newt Gingrich, the winner of tonight's Republican primary in South Carolina, about to speak. Maybe he hasn't arrived to the microphone.
No, still shaking hands.
Here he comes. Taking his speech out of his pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah, Newt Gingrich here, on here. Stage, his wife, Calista Vizek, next to him. And he took out two pieces of paper out of his pocket, so this could be a long one.
Could be a long, long series of Newt and USA chants there tonight, basking in his historic victory, really, if you think about it, Audie, because this is a state that has picked every GOP, eventual GOP nominee since 1980, and they may make history again tonight.
Okay, let me first of all say thank you to everyone in South Carolina who decided to be with us in changing Washington. Calista and I are particularly happy to have our daughters, our son-in-laws, my two chief debate coaches, Maggie and Robert, who are both right here. We're delighted to have my sisters are here, Robbie and Susan, they're just terrific. I also want to recognize several people who are just extraordinarily important in South Carolina making this happen. Judge Billy and Deborah Wilkins just really took over and did a great job. My former colleague, former Congressman John Napier, is just such a terrific class act. He did such a great job statewide putting things together. House Majority Leader Kenny Bingham came on board and really helped us with a statewide network. Speaker Bobby Harrell was tremendous. We traveled the last several days together. Andre Bauer made a big difference. Vivian Wong was tremendous in helping us all across the state. Peter McCoy was remarkable. And finally, I just want to say that we had a team on our staff who worked endless hours week after week. They did a great, great job. There are so many things. I think Calista and I have so many memories from so many parts of the state. Everybody, including people who, by accident or misinformation, were for the other candidates. But everybody was nice to us everywhere. And I just want to say that I think South Carolina showed Southern hospitality as beautifully as any place we've been. I also want to mention in particular General Livingston, who is a Congressional Medal of Honor winner, who gave me the great honor in the Yorktown of introducing me yesterday. And to have a man of that courage, that patriotism, and that dedication to freedom come out and support us really meant a great deal. And everybody who went to the Yorktown, it was a remarkable evening, and I'm just grateful to everybody for that moment of patriotism. That is the biggest thing I take from the campaign in South Carolina is that it is very humbling and very sobering to have so many people who so deeply want their country to get back on the right track. So many people who are so concerned about jobs, about medical costs, about the everyday parts of life, and who feel that the elites in Washington and New York have no understanding, no care, no concern, no reliability, and in fact do not represent them at all.
You're listening to special coverage of the South Carolina Republican primary from NPR News.
In the two debates that we had here in Myrtle Beach and then in Charleston, where people reacted so strongly to the news media, I think it was something very fundamental that I wish the powers that be in the news media would take seriously. The American people feel that they have elites who have been trying for a half century to force us to quit being American and become some kind of other system.
Yeah.
And the reaction, people completely misunderstand what's going on. It's not that I am a good debater. It is that I articulate the deepest felt values of the American people. You know, this is a remarkable system. What makes us different from virtually every other country in the world is that we are free, and because we're free, we can produce leadership from an amazing range of places. Now, sometimes that leadership is good. We once had an actor who made movies with chimpanzees. He turned out to be one of our greatest presidents and ended up with the disappearance of the Soviet Empire. We once had a peanut farmer nuclear physicist. He didn't turn out to be quite as good. But the genius of America is that you can come from any background. I watched tonight the fine speeches of the other three candidates on our side. And I was struck with how much they reflected the openness of the American system. You know, Rick Santorum showed enormous courage in Iowa when he had no money, nobody covered him, and he just kept campaigning. I rest my case. I mean, he has made an impact, right? I mean, here's a guy who articulates the values of social conservatism, who articulates the importance of manufacturing, and who may have been as right about the dangers of Iran as anybody in this country in the last 10 years. And then as a further example of how wide open our system is, you have Dr. Ron Paul, who on the issue of money and the Federal Reserve has been right for 25 years. And while I disagree with him on many other things, there's no doubt that a lot of his critique of inflation, of fiat money, and of the Federal Reserve is in fact absolutely the right direction. And it's something I can support strongly. And finally, Governor Romney, with whom I disagree on many issues, is nonetheless a good example of America. He's hardworking. He has been very successful. He has organized large systems. He did a terrific job at the Winter Olympics. And the fact is, if you look at the four of us, we are proof that you can come from a wide range of backgrounds. And in America, you have a chance to try to make your case no matter what the elites think in New York and Washington. Well, you've sort of just now captured the heart of this campaign. The fact is, we want to run not a Republican campaign, we want to run an American campaign. Because we are optimists about the future, because America has always been optimistic about the future. And we believe, as our new sign, which just got made today, points out, that if we unleash the American people, we can rebuild the America that we love. Now, I believe, and Calista and I decided to run because we, after a year of conversation, concluded that this is the most important election of our lifetime. If Barack Obama can get reelected after this disaster. Right. Just think how radical he would be in a second term. So I have a proposal. With your help, we are now moving on to Florida and beyond. And I want you to know that if, and by the way, anyone here who knows anyone in Florida, please contact them by sometime tomorrow, okay? And my good friend, Luis Haza, knows many people in Florida, and I'm confident he'll have an impact. But if I do become your nominee, and I think with your help, I will become your nominee, but with your help, together, if that happens, and it's all up to all of us to work to make it happen, if that happens, then I will challenge President Obama to 7 3-hour debates. To be fair, I don't want you to be disappointed, but I already have conceded that he can use a teleprompter if he wants to. After all, if you had to defend Obamacare, wouldn't you want to be able to use a teleprompter? Now, there are a number of key issues that we have to talk about with the president. I'm going to get there in a second. I believe this campaign comes down to economics, including jobs, economic growth, balancing the budget, the value of money. It comes down to national security, what threatens us and what we have to do about it. But the centerpiece of this campaign, I believe, is American exceptionalism versus the radicalism of Saul Alinsky.
You're listening to special coverage of the South Carolina Republican primary from NPR News.
Well, you know, there's a lot to just doing that, because the fact is, what we are going to argue is that American exceptionalism, the American Declaration of Independence, the American Constitution, the American Federalist Papers, the founding fathers of America are the source from which we draw our understanding of America. He draws his from Saul Alinsky, radical left-wingers, and people who don't like the classical America. And one of the issues we're going to address head on. She would be a great first lady, and with your help, she will be a great first lady. One of the key issues, and I'm prepared to take this straight at the president and, frankly, straight at the elite media. One of the key issues is the growing anti-religious bigotry of our elites. And if you get a chance, if you go to newt.org, my campaign site, there's a 54-page paper there on the balance of power, putting the judiciary back in its proper role and eliminating dictatorial religious bigots such as Judge Barry in San Antonio, who issued a ruling that if the students, not only could the students not pray at their graduation, if they used the word benediction, the word invocation, the word God, ask the audience to stand or ask for a moment of silence, he would put the superintendent in jail. Now, we don't have speech dictatorship in America by anti-religious bigots, period. The second big theme, frankly, is one that every South Carolinian understands. It's jobs, economic growth, balancing the budget, having stable money. And let's be very clear, and again, this makes some of the elite media nervous. President Obama has been, historically, the most effective food stamp president in American history. I worked with Ronald Reagan to create jobs, and 16 million jobs were created by the American people in the 1980s. I worked with Bill Clinton, a Democrat, to create jobs, and 11 million jobs were created by the American people during the 4 years that I was Speaker. I would like to be the best paycheck president in American history. And I want to go into every neighborhood of every ethnic background in every part of the country and say to people very simply, if you want your children to have a life of dependency and food stamps, you have a candidate, it's Barack Obama. If you want your children to have a life of independency and paychecks, you have a candidate, it's Newt Gingrich. And I'll bet you we have votes everywhere. Part of jobs in the economy, frankly, is to shrink the power of Washington. I just talked tonight with Governor Rick Perry, who is deeply committed. I was very generous for his endorsement this week. His passion is implementing the 10th Amendment. We are going to work with him to return power to the states, to local governments, to get it out of Washington, D.C. But one reason that I ask you to be with me and not just for me, if we shrink the Washington bureaucracy, we have to grow citizenship back home to fill the vacuum. I am also committed to getting back to a balanced budget, and since I am the only Speaker of the House in your lifetime to have helped create four consecutive balanced budgets, I think I can tell you as President, I will work very hard to get back to a balanced budget as rapidly as possible, and then to run a surplus to pay down the debt so no Chinese leverage exists on the United States by having our debt.
That's former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, the victor in tonight's primary vote in South Carolina, speaking to his supporters in Columbia, South Carolina. Here in the studio with us is Matthew Continetti from The Weekly Standard, NPR's Mara Liasson, and E.J. Dionne from The Washington Post and the Brookings Institution. I'm Guy Raz.
And I'm Audie Cornish. And I'm going to put this question to all of you. I find it interesting Newt Gingrich is back to being the gracious Republican, saying kind words about all the other candidates. Maybe we can start with you, Matthew. What do we make about the way he sort of set things up for the next phase?
What an interesting comparison with Romney's speeches in Iowa and New Hampshire, where Romney immediately outlines his general election critique of Obama, an appeal aimed at the independent swing voters who will decide the election. Gingrich eschews all that, along with any sign of a prepared speech. And what he does instead is he's incorporating the arguments from his rivals, which is something Romney has not done. So he takes an issue of money from Ron Paul. He says the most important thing is quote-unquote religious bigots in judicial
the anti-religious
roads.
Bigotry
bigots,
of the elites. This was his number one issue, he says.
That's he's taking from Rick Santorum and the social conservatives. And then he brings in at the end of what we were listening to, Rick Perry in federalism. He's trying to take all these strands, I think, to coalesce and become so that he is the anti-Romney conservative. Be interesting to see if it works.
Mara, it sounded like he was looking forward towards Tampa, towards the nominating convention.
Well, it's interesting. When I was listening to him, I said, wow, this sounds like a movement conservative speech, not a kind of speech designed to help a broad spectrum of Republicans imagine him as the nominee. But then Matthew, in his wisdom, just reminded me he has to win the nomination. He has to consolidate the conservative vote. He has a long way to go before he does that, and he understands that. The first order of business is to get the Perry and Santorum and Paul supporters behind him, because when you look at those totals, Romney is back to being a 25% man from these results. He's back to being, Mr. 25%. And if you can get the 75% behind you, you can theoretically win the nomination. But it also is interesting, this was not a prepared speech. It sounded like his usual off-the-cuff professorial lecture. I think that he's going to have to—he didn't give a soundbite tonight. He didn't give something out of this that we can hear all day tomorrow. This was his biggest night, not just of the campaign, the biggest night of the last, as Guy said, since 1994. He didn't do as much with it for a bigger audience as I thought he could.
EJ?
Let's savor the fact that Newt Gingrich has done an extraordinary thing tonight, and I think he is an unbelievably paradoxical or even contradictory figure. Mara pointed to one of those paradoxes earlier. Gingrich thrives on attacking the media, which he did over and over again tonight. And yet he's very effective in using the media and actually gets along quite comfortably with reporters. He casts himself as a strong conservative, but he also ran, and I heard him say this over and over in the last couple of weeks, as someone who got along with Democrats, got things done with Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton, yeah.
He's run on the Clinton economy all during the campaign. He casts himself as somebody who's against the intellectual elite, but this is an intellectual and a college professor. He is all these things. Now, you heard Mitt Romney tonight really trying to turn Newt Gingrich into a socialist, and he's trying to run to the right of Gingrich on economic issues. Now, I think turning Gingrich into a socialist is about as easy as turning President Obama into a member of the John Birch Society or the Tea Party. I just don't think that's going to work very well. And Newt Gingrich has drawn a class line across the Republican electorate, and that could serve him pretty well for a while.
Matt?
Yeah, it's, I mean, Romney's argument is economics. I'm the businessman. Elect me, I'll fix the economy. Now, the economy is actually showing signs of improving, and I think Republicans are aware at some dim level that might not be as big an issue in November as it is right now. Gingrich's argument, it's not economic, it's cultural. EJ alludes to this in class, but the way Americans view class, it's not so much economics, it's culture. And so what does Gingrich do right away? It's not the economy, it's the elites. I'm going to take the country back from the elites. That's potentially a much more powerful argument than Romney's.
Matt Cottineni, Mara Liasson, and EJ Dion, stand by. We'll be back with more in a moment. You're listening to special coverage of the South Carolina Republican primary from NPR News. From NPR News, this is special coverage of the South Carolina Republican primary. I'm Guy Raz.
And I'm Audie Cornish. South Carolina goes to Newt Gingrich tonight. He savored the moment at his headquarters in Columbia.
The biggest thing I take from the campaign in South Carolina is that it is very humbling and very sobering to have so many people who so deeply want their country to get back on the right track.
The former House Speaker won about 40% of the vote, with nearly all precincts reporting.
Now, this is an astounding reversal of fortune for the former House Speaker, and tonight he talked about his strategy if he goes all the way to the presidential nomination.
If that happens, and it's all up to all of us to work to make it happen, if that happens, then I will challenge President Obama to 7 3-hour debates.
And we will wait to see if Newt Gingrich can make that happen as the contest moves now to Florida and beyond. We're going to go next to Florida to talk with Tom Slade. He's the former chairman of the Republican Party there. He's speaking to us by phone in Jacksonville. Hello there, Tom Slade.
How are you tonight?
Good. Are there any arguments you heard the candidates making in South Carolina that aren't going to fly in Florida?
Not really. People can pick a little bit around the edges, but basically this was pure 100% Republicanism, and the kind of ideas and advocacies that people who are registered Republicans and who have worked on behalf of the philosophy of the Republican Party through the years welcome, particularly in contrast to our existing president.
And Florida has early voting, and we've talked already about how much money Mitt Romney has spent there. Does that put him truly at an advantage at this point?
Well, not probably so, but not prohibitively so for the other candidates. I've gotten an enormous amount of mail from Romney, and from Santorum. But as you have seen over the last week, one or two of the right kind of questions in a debate to Newt Gingrich, he can turn the whole campaign around on its ear, and did so. So I don't know that we're living in a male television environment that was quite as influential as it's been in past years.
What are Florida Republicans going to be looking for?
They're I have been watching television tonight and listened to Newt Gingrich, acceptance speech for winning South Carolina. And he detailed a pretty specific set of advocacies that are, that will be precisely the agenda of most Republicans. He is advocating the change of the federal government from a dominant power to a less than that. He pointed out that the Corps of Engineers take 8 years to study a pipeline, and we won the Second World War in 3.5 years.
But, Mr. Slade, you haven't endorsed yet. It's been my sort of mini mission tonight to get everyone who's not on the record on the record. Did any of the results make you lean one way or another?
Yes, I've already sent a little bit of money to Gingrich, and I've known him for a long number of years, and have been affiliated with him on any number of Republican occasions, and I think he would be a sparkling president for the United States, and so more than likely that's what I would do.
That's Tom Slade. He's the former chairman of the Republican Party of Florida. He spoke to us from Jacksonville, Florida. Thank you so much, Tom Slade.
Good to be with you.
And let's head back to our panel here in the studio. Matt Continetti from the Weekly Standard, our own Mara Liasson, and E.J. Dionne from the Washington Post and Brookings. First to you, Matt. Tom Slade, former chairman of the Republican Party of Florida, says he thinks Newt Gingrich should make a sparkling president, right, Audie? Is that what he said?
It's certainly in glowing terms.
Effervescent.
Yeah, effervescent.
Exactly.
Well, Gingrich's weakness has been a reluctance on the part of GOP party and institutional elites to embrace him. One of the reasons is many of them have personal histories with him, and they didn't like working with him. But we began to see in Gingrich's acceptance speech tonight, when he kind of did a shout-out at the beginning of mentioning all the local officials who had been supportive of his candidacy, and we saw Rick Perry, longest-serving governor in Texas history, you know, no weakling, even though he really underperformed in the presidential primaries, but he represents a certain part of the party apparatus. And then we see a former Florida state chair. Maybe you'll see some of these, these party elites move to embrace Gingrich. Ultimately, in the end, it's more important what the voters want.
Mara?
Yeah, I think we have seen kind of the limits of the Republican establishment's ability to control things. I mean, I think the Republican Party for the last 2 years has been in a Tea Party moment and a kind of insurgent mood, anti-establishment mood. And I think that's what Newt Gingrich is betting on. By necessity, he has to consolidate the anti-Romney vote. But I think he is betting that there is such a strong desire in the Republican Party, anti-establishment desire, that he can really ride that. The other thing that I thought former Chairman Slade said that was interesting is the TV and mail are just less important because of the proliferation of debates. The debates have been the main reason that Gingrich has surged. There are two debates in Florida. I think Monday is the first one in Tampa, and I think Thursday is the second one in Jacksonville. Is that right?
Hmm.
And Mitt Romney needs another debate approach. He just hasn't been able. Once he was challenged, he was coasted in the early debates when everybody else was beating up on each other. But he hasn't been able to figure out how to attack Gingrich, how to absorb the attacks, even on things that were obvious questions that could be anticipated, like the whole tax return issue. One thing that Gingrich has been able to do that Republicans have just loved is not just take on the elites in the news media. He looks strong and commanding. He looks like one tough hombre who can take on President Obama. And I think that when Romney said this week, well, I'm going to take the free enterprise system and stuff it down his throat, stuff it down Obama's throat, that just sounded like a line that had been cooked up, you know, in the PowerPoint factory of the Romney campaign. You know, he didn't really sound like he was going to step in.
Gingrich has turned debates into the oxygen of his candidacy.
Yes.
And Newt Gingrich, Mitt Romney has to cut it off. Gingrich has turned this from a race for president into a race for who's the best guy to debate Romney. I think another issue is, what does Santorum do? Because I think from this point forward, we've talked about Santorum splitting the anti-Romney vote. I think in the future, he may be splitting the anti-Gingrich vote. And who knew that we'd ever be talking about that? And lastly, Romney won't get the mantle of electability back unless he becomes a far better campaigner than he was in South Carolina.
To be electable, yeah.
Well, Matt Continetti from the Weekly Standard, Mara Liasson, NPR's Mara Liasson here in the studio, and E.J. Dionne, Thank you all very, very much.
Good to be with you.
Thank you.
It was an exciting evening indeed. I'm Guy Raz.
And I'm Audie Cornish. You're listening to special coverage from the South Carolina Republican primary from NPR News. Don't forget, to get more information and more analysis, head to our website at npr.org.